WCNC Charlotte. This is Flashpoint, where power and politics collide and the tough questions get asked and answered.
Thanks for joining us here on Flashpoint. I'm Ben Thompson. Today we are talking transit. In just a moment, a one-on-one interview with the CEO of Charlotte Area Transit, his agency tasked with getting people moving around the city. But recently they've come under fire. Staffing shortages, delayed service, combined with the city bursting at the seams that's needing transit. CAT seems barely able to keep up. And then later, a look at the city's $13.5 billion transit plan, new light rail, commuter train, greenways, how a new city council could reshape that plan. But first, joining us now, the CEO of Charlotte Area Transit System, John Lewis. Mr. Lewis, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
All right. I think by most accounts, a bit of a rough summer for your organization and for some of your riders, with staffing shortages, some service delays, schedule changes. As we start the fall, do you feel like you as the CEO and your organization have a better grasp and better handle of some of these problems?
Sure. I think it's, you know, number one, it's been a rough couple of years from the beginning of the pandemic to now. It's been somewhat of a roller coaster ride. I'm so proud of our employees. From the beginning of the pandemic, you know, we were wondering whether or not we were going to be able to continue to provide service. And our bus operators and rail operators really stepped up to the plate and showed up each and every day. But after multiple years of pandemic and having to deal with all of the issues associated with it, the last 6 months really became a challenge from a labor standpoint. It was harder to recruit new employees, and some of our team members just quite frankly got you know, looked for other opportunities. And so this was a recent phenomenon where we had more people calling off on a daily basis than we normally plan for. In the midst of that, our contractor, RATP Dev, was in the middle of contract negotiations with their employee union, the SMART union. And so having contract negotiations in the midst of a pandemic and all of the pandemic fatigue really was a perfect storm of challenges for us. But I think we've turned the corner. A couple of weeks ago, reduced our level of service so that we can provide a level of reliability to our customers, the kind of reliability they had come to depend on from CATS pre-pandemic. And we just realized that we needed to reduce service in line with the number of people that were showing up for work on a daily basis. And since we've done that, we've not had any the level of reliability issues that we were seeing for the last couple of months. So I think we've turned the corner on that. The good news is the RATP Dev has reached a tentative agreement with their union on the contract. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that the union members will vote affirmatively on that, and we can get back to business as usual.
When do you expect you'll be able to scale back up when it comes to some of the services that you've cut back on?
I'm hopeful that if we get this contract agreement with the employee union, that will help us tremendously. As I mentioned, we've increased wages significantly and made some additional changes, including to the attendance policy. That was a challenge for us. We've gotten some concessions from the union on that. And so I think that will go a long way in reaching that goal. And as we continue to hire on, as we reach the level of employees availability, we will add service incrementally as we're able to. And so I'm looking forward to that by the end of this year.
Okay, by the end of this year. Perfect. Thank you for that. I appreciate it. Let's talk about the GOLD line. How do we make it so the GOLD line is more successful? It, too, has been plagued with shortages of drivers as well as delayed service. Full disclosure, as a person who lives along the GOLD line, I would love to see it to be a success and fully functional. What will that take in your mind?
So I think there are a couple of things. Number one, we do not have the issues with manpower on our rail side that we do on the bus side. And so the available manpower is not a challenge for us in that. What really is introducing this new technology into the traveling public. Having a rail system that operates in the operating traffic, in the same traffic lanes as individual cars, has been a challenge. I don't know that a week hasn't gone by that we haven't had a minor incident or two, either someone making contact with our rail vehicles, or quite frankly, people just parking on the alignment. So as we're looking to increase enforcement, if you park on the alignment, you will be ticketed and you will be towed if you stay long enough. But also as we're continuing our planning for the next phase, we've got to find ways to put that mobility option, put the Gold Line in its own right of way, so that we don't have the conflict with single occupant vehicles. That service needs to operate more like the Blue Line, and we're looking forward to making those adjustments in the future.
I've noticed some new signage that went up on Trade Street, trying to warn people against stopping. To your point, it almost requires a cultural change of people sort of understanding how this system works and how to sort of navigate around it. A new city council tasked with what exactly to do with this $13.5 billion transit plan we've talked about now for 2 years. I understand your job is administering the current transit system, but in your mind, long-term, what would you like to see happen when it comes to transit and transportation here in Charlotte in the next 5, 10, 15 years?
The size of our city and our region, the population is going to grow exponentially over the next 10 years, and we've got to stay ahead of the curve on that, or else we're going to have quality of life issues. People think traffic is bad now. Imagine what it's going to be when 400,000 more people move into this region over the next 10 or 15 years. And so we have an opportunity with a plan that will provide mobility options to everyone within our region. But that plan costs, and we can debate what is the best way to pay for that plan and how we deliver. I'm looking forward to that continued conversation, but we have a incredible opportunity. Federal investment in public transit is the highest it's ever been. We have a bit of a competitive edge in Charlotte now that we are ahead in the design for the Silver Line, for Gold Line Phase 3, for the extension of Blue Line to Ballantyne, and importantly, the Red Line to Huntersville, Davidson, and Cornelius. But our competition is catching up. Other jurisdictions are starting to get into the game, and there's going to be intense competition for that federal funding. And so I'm hoping that we will answer that funding question in the near future so that we can continue to provide mobility options for people in our region.
Back in June, CATS received federal funding to launch a on-demand transit services, sort of like Uber. How far are we from making that a reality?
We will start our pilot in the next couple of months. We are working through the contractual negotiations with the providers. We're looking to, and in our bus priority study that was identified in our Envision My Ride program, we identified over 20 areas throughout our system that we believe on-demand options will be very effective. We're going to start off by the end of the year with five of those areas so that we can kick the tires and get to understand what the demand for it, what is the best way to address that demand, and then we will continue to expand that as time goes on. But it is a very important part of our overall plan for mobility in the region, and it is just another exciting opportunity for us.
Wider view going forward, some city and state lawmakers have expressed concern given the challenges that have faced CATS in the last few months about giving your agency more resources to do some of these big, huge projects going forward. How do you plan to earn some of that trust back for folks either here at the Government Center in Uptown or up at the General Assembly who would have to end up signing off on this new project no matter what it looks like?
Well, I think the challenges that we've talked about today in regards to labor and other things are challenges that every industry is having right now. I just read this week that American Airlines is cutting back on flights to Charlotte. So this is not just a public transit issue. It is a nationwide and it's in a macroeconomic issue. I'm going to leave people smarter than me to answer that one. But in regard to the confidence that people can have in Charlotte area transit system, I say all you have to do is look back to 2018. We delivered the Blue Line extension, 9.2 miles of light rail, 12 stations, $1.2 billion project. We delivered that project on time and under $60 million under budget. And the Federal Transit Administration was so pleased with our stewardship of their federal investment that they allowed us to keep that money and invest in other projects. And so we are adding another station in South End around the Publix. We're doing some other upgrades along the system. So we know how to be good stewards of the public dollar, where that has been a track record that we've earned, and we will continue to deal with that despite this anomaly of labor challenges that we've dealt with over the last year or so.
Final question. You have a big job. You're in charge of a huge transit system in an exploding city. What keeps you up at night?
What keeps me up at night? What doesn't? I think really it is, I am really chomping at the bit and anxious to get our manpower levels back to where we need them so that we can provide the level of reliability that prior to 2020 was a daily expectation and a daily delivery that we had. And so working with our partners in labor, I believe we'll get there. I think we've plugged the holes in the ship right now. Now it's to start to get rowing in the right direction.
All right, John Lewis, CEO of CATS. Mr. Lewis, thanks for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
All right, more Flashpoint after this. Joining us now is Eli Portillo. He's with UNC Charlotte's Urban Institute, formerly with The Observer. Eli, thanks for coming back on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Given that we are now dealing with a brand new city council just in the last couple of weeks, you have written that a slimmed down version of that $13.5 billion transformational mobility plan is very likely.
Yes, I think, you know, we haven't seen any movement with the original plan, especially with the key question, which is how we'll pay for it. And given that it's been closing in on 2 years since that plan was unveiled, we've now got a new council in which I believe four members were not on council when the first plan came out. And the fact that, you know, we really need something to get this plan moving down the track, as it were, to use a little bad metaphor there, I think we're likely to see some changes to bring that total price tag down.
And what do you see as the likely sort of low hanging fruits here on this project that are easy way to sort of slim this down?
Well, there are a few different ways that I think the city could go. For one, the $13.5 billion Charlotte Moves plan has one really big part in it, and that is the East-West Silver Line. This is a majority of the cost in that plan. It's been estimated at more than $8 billion. So if you were to, say, build it in pieces, which is what they did with the Blue Line, and say, only build the airport to uptown piece first, you could cut that price tag a lot and say, hey, we're still going to do it. We want to do the whole thing, but we're going to start with a smaller segment, maybe only half of it, that would cost $4 billion. And that would be a big cost savings right off the top there. I think that the city also, as we know, has a problem with its bus system right now. They need a lot of investment. They need more buses, more operators, repaired buses to supplement the fleet that they have now. That's been estimated by city officials at somewhere around $100 million in costs for acquiring new buses and $50 million in operating costs to improve frequency and service. Those numbers are a little old, so even if they've gone up more, you know, say you're talking $200 or $300 million, that's still a very small fraction of this total plan. And I think you could definitely see a push to say, hey, we can't do everything we want to right now. but let's fix the bus system. We know that that's kind of a dire need, and we've got to take care of that.
You spoke about some of the contents of the plan and things that are that could be on the chopping block. But what about the strategy that city leaders have taken? And they've been criticized by almost every possible side in this, in their approach. For one, there's the sales tax issue, but also the sort of engagement with Raleigh and engagement with other cities and counties. How much of this is the content of the plan that you just talked about, or are they going to also have to change their strategy of getting buy-in?
Well, it doesn't really matter what the content of the plan is if there's not money to pay for it. So I think that that's going to be really crucial. Right now, the plan as it's envisioned would depend on a 1 cent sales tax, which the city needs permission from the General Assembly to put on the ballot for local voter approval. They have not approached Raleigh formally for that and asked. As we know, city politics are largely dominated by Democrats in Charlotte. Raleigh, of course, the General Assembly is Republican majority. So there's been some question about, hey, you know, even if the city makes a really good case, will the legislature let them do this? Now, we did see Mayor Vi Lyles appoint Ed Driggs, one of the two Republicans on council, to chair the Transportation Transit Committee this past week. So that really could be a signal to the legislature of, hey, we want to work with you. We have a Republican who's been skeptical of the plans that we've put forward on council, who's chairing this committee right now. And, you know, we think that we can really work with you. Look, here's an olive branch, so to speak. On the other hand, there's also the question of regional buy-in that you mentioned. The Silver Line, as envisioned, would eventually stretch all the way from Gaston through Charlotte, Mecklenburg to Union County. The city will not pay to build a transit line outside of Mecklenburg County, a rail transit line. So, you know, you're going to need some regional funding there. There's also an initiative to create a regional bus system that the Centralina Regional Council is heading. That's not going to happen without a regional funding source. And I think you could see a shift for the city to really engage with regional partners more and try to get them on board and say, hey, we want to get everyone on the train first and then agree how to fund it. Because right now what we've got is really a plan that Charlotte has kind of put out and said, hey, this is our plan, isn't it great? And the region has kind of, I think, shrugged so far. There's been enthusiasm in places like Gaston County for the idea of a rail line that would stretch to Charlotte, but no moves towards funding, providing dollars for that.
A final question here. They've been criticized for their issues when it comes to staffing and delayed service. Can it build confidence so that all these stakeholders can trust in CATS, the agency, to carry out what is a sprawling plan?
That's going to be a really big challenge. We've heard rumblings from Republicans in the state legislature of, hey, you know, we're not going to be funding an expansion when we think this agency has problems right now. Councilmember Tariq Bakari, one of the two Republicans on city council, has said that he won't support any major funding initiative, any major new initiatives at CATS until there are basically serious leadership changes, till the, you know, shop is cleaned up, however you want to put it. And I think that that gets back to what the contents of this plan are, because, you know, if Charlotte basically steps back and says, hey, we're not going to do this big, big plan right now. What we're going to do is, say, fix the buses, build some greenways, fill in some sidewalk gaps, you know, do a $2 to $4 billion plan. Still very significant, still a lot of money, but not this very expansive $13.5 billion plan. I think you could see a move to say, we're going to fix what we've got, we're going to add some greenways, do that stuff, and then build regional buy-in and figure out how we're going to fund things like the Silver Line, how we're going to make the Red Line happen, how we're going to do these really big ticket, multi-billion dollar items.
All right, Eli Portillo. Eli, you always make us smarter when you come on. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. More Flashpoint after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint. A big week this past one for Charlotte City Council and the folks who represent the Queen City. The State Bureau of Investigation confirming it's looking to see if City Councilman James Mitchell's breaking the law. The agency says it received a request from the Mecklenburg County District Attorney. You might recall Mitchell served the city for 20 years, but resigned in January of last year after concerns over his role as the head of R.J. Leeper Construction. It's a company that works with the city on several big projects, which has prompted conflict of interest questions. Mitchell says he has no problems with this investigation.
I mean, I was elected to divide public service. I'm a passionate about affordable housing, small business, and so this won't change at all. The voters told me to go down here and provide public service. That's what I'm going to do. Oh, I look forward to the SBI investigation, and I say let's all pause and wait on the results of the investigation. I look forward to it. And there's a...
The odd thing is he stepped down because of this, but then ran, won, and we're yet again facing these same issues. The investigation comes just days after he was sworn in that at-large position there on City Council. We'll keep you posted. Meanwhile, City Council members signing off on putting $1 million in federal grants towards expanding the city's violence prevention program. The funds will be used to help areas of Nations Ford Road and Arrowwood Road, along with the Southside Homes neighborhood and West Boulevard. The goal is to add a bigger police presence in those areas and build stronger community relationships. More Flashpoint after this. Welcome back to Flashpoint. Before we leave you, folks, come interact with us on social media. Let us know what you think, what you'd like to see us cover here on Flashpoint. And as always, remember to subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you get yours. And we'll see you back here next weekend.